Good evening, everybody. Get to move closer here. When Heath and Eva aren't here, I like to get closer. Spit on Dennis. You got to be careful because I might spit the closer you get to me. Okay, Mark chapter 6 and verse 30 is where we're going to start tonight. Mark 6:30. A song's about faith. That's kind of one of Mark's big themes I'm seeing more and more is about faith. And he's presenting these, I think, contrasting pictures of belief and unbelief. That's kind of what we've been looking at. People taking this information they have about Jesus and responding in certain ways. And that's often related to the status of their hearts. I've been so impressed about, you know, it's always one of those situations where you know certain passages, but when you actually see it in context, it's amazing the greater depth that it has. And so the parable of the soils, like we all know that story. That's one of the, you know, one of the easiest parables in the whole Bible. And yet it applies to everything that all the people that Jesus has been interacting with. It's really amazing. And so this belief or unbelief, how they're responding, it's related to the status of their hearts often. So we had, at the end of chapter 5 or throughout chapter 5, we had the faith of Jairus. We had the sort of anonymously sick woman. Their faith was contrasted with the unbelief of the Nazareth people and Herod that we talked about on Sunday. Tonight we're going to focus on the disciples because Mark sort of zeroes in on them. And they kind of come out periodically as a group of people that Mark likes to focus on. But as I was implying, sometimes the people that are closest to the situation are often the ones that have the most trouble, and that's what we're going to see as we go through the rest of chapter 6 here. Something to think about. Just keep that in mind as we deal with unbelief, maybe amongst ourselves, maybe amongst people that we know. How hard are we on people that have trouble with belief? Because these guys should have got it, right? And it's easy to be hard on them as well, but it's just something to think about. The last two times the disciples have been called out, just to refresh our minds, at the end of chapter 4, they had been in the boat with Jesus. There was a storm. Jesus calmed the storm. He rebuked them for their unbelief. And then, as we saw on Sunday, in chapter 6, verse 7 through 13, he sends them out. Gives them the power to exercise these demons. He gave them some instructions about their evangelism, and then off they go. And the last word that we had in verse 13 was that they cast out many demons. They anointed many with oil who were sick and healed them. And then in verse 30, it picks up this strand. It says, the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And these next stories unfold in this context. So don't lose sight of that. They've been out doing this. It makes it very clear that they were, I would say, successful in doing these things. They come back and they're telling Jesus everything that they had done and everything that they taught. Okay? So let's look in verse 31 and we'll read down through verse 44. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, this is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered them, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. And taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven. He said a blessing, broke the loaves, and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all. and they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. So the disciples are back. They're telling Jesus everything they've done. Seems like they're tired because not only have they been out doing this, but there's a lot of people coming and going, and they just haven't had a chance, it says, even to sit down and have something to eat. So Jesus has a suggestion. Hey, let's go somewhere. My version says desolate, out in the wilderness. You know, just you get the sense that it's somewhere. Let's just get away from these people for a little bit so you guys can relax. They get in the boat, but people see who they are, people see where they're going, and as usual, they can't get away, and they go on foot and are beat them to the place where they're going. And when they get there, it's interesting, the focus on Jesus. I don't think that the story is really so much about Jesus as it is the disciples, but I really love the detail here. And Wayne's had at least one lesson about this where he sees this crowd and what happens.
He has compassion on them because they are like sheep without shepherd.
Yeah, it's interesting, but they kind of knew where they were going, right? It's not like they were completely directionless, and yet his assessment of them is, but you guys really don't know where you're going or what you're doing. And so what does he do? What's the response to that?
He teaches them.
He doesn't lead them somewhere, not in a physical sense, but he certainly does in a spiritual sense. This word compassion is interesting. It's filled with pity. It's being moved in the deepest possible way. I think when I was looking at the definition, it had something to do with like feeling it in your like innermost organs. It's not just oh, bless your heart. We're good at that, right? This is like real compassion, real pity, feeling it. And I don't know if this is true. One of the things I read said that this verb is only used to describe Jesus himself or explain the actions of people in his parables who resemble him. So if that's true, this really like deep feeling of compassion and pity that Jesus is showing here is something that in scripture is only attributed to him. And I think that's telling. And what does it lead him to do? Teach people that appear not to have any direction. He's teaching this crowd, but he's also working on these disciples as well. And let's not, or the apostles specifically here, it's the 12 that had been out teaching. So let's not lose sight of that either. He's in the business of teaching them, as we're going to see this story unfold, okay? Any thoughts about that? It's just a weird little statement that's thrown in, but I don't want to lose sight of it because it kind of applies to what we're talking about, but not specifically. Okay. Then it starts to get late. What's the problem?
Supper time.
But is that a problem? Why is that a problem, Maria?
They're in a secluded place where there isn't any fortified food.
Yeah. Yeah, they intentionally went away from where population centers would be at. I guess they didn't have time to pack anything, or at least maybe they had something, but the issue is brought up that there are all these people out here. Where are they going to eat? What are they going to eat? We're nowhere. And so they've got a solution. What's the solution?
Tell them
to go away. Yeah, but they don't tell them. Yeah, Jesus is the one that's keeping them here after all. Like, tell them, finish your teaching. Tell them to go into towns and buy something to eat. And I don't know, maybe I'm going to make more out of this than there is, but when these guys talk to Jesus, usually, how do they address him? There's a difference in the way they're talking here, I think. Yeah, And they even would preface this by saying, master or teacher, you know, there's this sense of respect. But notice what they do here. Hey, this is a desolate place and it's getting late. I like how you phrase that, Gretchen. Like, you gotta pay attention to this. This is an issue. Aren't you worried about these crowds? The same guy that just had compassion in the previous verse in a way that nobody else ever does. Yeah, he was worried about them. I'm just wondering, again, maybe I'm making more out of it, but you don't get that respectful address. Maybe there's like a hint of rudeness in this. And I'm just wondering if it's related to they've been out healing people, teaching. They're feeling good about themselves. They've just been telling Jesus about everything they did. Maybe they're feeling it a little bit. Jonathan?
They were tired before they even went out there, right?
Tired, right.
And I know I can get that way too, to a point. Just leave me alone until I get some food in me, then we can talk. You know? So maybe that plays a part in it, I don't know.
We're sorry we did that to you when we were camping and hiking. that's awesome. I didn't think about that, but that's certainly in play here. And maybe there's a lot of it, but yeah. Go ahead, David.
They're anticipating the problem that they see. I mean, they realize that it's kind of like Jonathan's saying, they know what happens when people get hungry, that you get a little irritable. And here they got 5,000 plus women and children, so they got a big crowd. You know, maybe 15 or 20,000 people or whatever. They got a bunch of people, and so they don't want a mob, angry mob here. So they come up with the idea, the best thing is let's just call this off and let's send them on their way. But Jesus turns it around, because right now it's not their problem, and they're trying to avoid it being their problem, but Jesus makes it their problem. He says, you take her.
Okay, and so
he's expected us to take care of it.
Okay, so he says, you guys do it, and then what's their response? We don't have enough money for that. Are you crazy? And we learn later how many people are there, at least how many men were there. So they're looking at this crowd and thinking, well, we don't have enough money to do that. Okay. So Jesus says, okay, what do you got? They find the 5 loaves of bread. They find the 2 fish. It's very sort of systematic here. They sit down in groups. He says, you know, it says on the green grass. I just like the details that Mark's throwing in here. It doesn't seem to really have any bearing on how the story goes, but sit down in groups on the green grass. He says a blessing. He then gives to the disciples to distribute. And I don't lose sight of that little detail. To me, that's interesting how it's worded. They don't know what to do. They're sort of ordering Jesus around. He tells them take care of it. They say, we still don't know what to do. He does this, and then he hands it to them to distribute. And so, I don't know. There's something in that. We'll get to, I'm thinking about that a little bit more, but we'll come to that. So, he gives it to the disciples to set before the people. And what's the result of all this? Everyone's fed. They were ate and were satisfied. And another way that you can translate that word satisfied is what'd you say, Brad?
Filled.
Fatten was what I was going to say. There's no, that's a whole pizza for Miguel's when we go hiking, right? That's when you really, there's no room left. You fill up. And I think that's the implication here. It wasn't just a little bit to get by. It was all you wanted, and then some, because what was left over. You think that number is a coincidence? I know we see 12 a lot, but very specifically, this seems to me in verse 30, we're told about the apostles that have come back. So we're talking very specifically about 12 people. 12 people, it seems to be, are the ones complaining to Jesus and not knowing what to do in this situation. He takes charge, has them distribute the food to the people. Who do you think's gathering up the leftovers? Probably 12 of them. And there just happens to be all 12 of them has to gather up a full basket of these leftovers out of what they thought was not enough resources to do anything with. Okay? I don't think that's a coincidence there. And then I just love how you kind of got the sense there's a lot of people, but then Mark just throws it on at the end. Oh, and by the way, there were 5,000 people today. At this point, you don't know how many there are. We take for granted, oh, he feeds 5,000, but if you were reading the story as it unfolded, then all of a sudden, boom, 5,000. Wait, what? 5,000 people ate? That's a lot. It just gets tossed on there at the end.
That kind of makes sense. But when you take the 12 and say, okay, now we're going to divide up and you're going to distribute it among these 5,000 men, which all the women and children, I mean, how do you even divide two fish and these 5 loaves to 12 people that they would feel like they got anything to carry over? You know, I mean, it just doesn't even make sense.
This is one of those, like, when you just try and rationalize, how did it happen? Obviously, it's a miracle, but just, right. Like, when it broke, what did it look like? You know, I would just love to see visually how it would happen. And did they even realize what was happening as it was going on? I guess they did, but I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
But that's the whole point.
Yeah.
You believe that it happened.
Yeah.
Without knowing the particulars, how it happened.
Right.
We all do. That's the
whole point. Right. Go ahead, Brad.
And then we have two examples back to back of God providing for needs.
Okay.
He provided for the needs of the 12. He said, don't take anything but a pair of shoes and a stick, and God will provide. Here he is again showing he will provide for the needs of the people. And we need to remember this lesson as well. He will provide for our needs. Jesus promised it in the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah, and maybe while we're here, that's where I want us to end up thinking about these two stories, because I think what we're going to see next happens with that. But don't lose sight of this. What he told them was God's going to provide. We talked about those instructions, how they're supposed to handle themselves when they're out teaching. I get the implication when they come back that they did exactly what Jesus told them. Take nothing but a staff. Take nothing. Okay, that is, I'm going to call it outside the box thinking, right? And it appears by what we see here that they were successful in doing that. They had to follow that line of thinking to be successful. They come back and they're telling Jesus about everything they're done. They're feeling good about themselves. And then when they're asked to think outside the box again, what do? They can't do it. We don't have enough money. You see what I'm saying here? Like they were not seeing much past their nose at this point. And they had been living the life of trusting in Jesus who would provide. But he empowered them to do that, but they just couldn't continue that way of thinking when that's all Jesus does. So let's not lose that as we're thinking through what these guys are going through. Go ahead.
I was thinking about see them, know where they're going, watch them, get there before they get there. And then this boat comes up, you know, here they are again, these guys again that have nothing. And then there's 5,000 people that get fed. You know, I'm sure they're happy about getting fed. You know, maybe we went down there and Jesus prepared us a big meal. You know, but there was no big trucks and shipments and stuff that come in. It was a bunch of guys with nothing that got off of a boat that they seen and fed all these people. And so the mass, you know, the volume of the food that those people ate, I mean,
it's impressive.
That'd be a big, enormous mound of food, I would think, you know, probably
yeah.
Fill up the whole end of this building here, you know, with loaves and fishes. You know, they weren't carrying that under their, you know, garment. And so, you know, it wasn't just the fact that people got fed, but they see these guys had nothing.
Steve.
Just thinking what you said there, Glass. He
told them to do it, knowing it was a test of their faith again, and they failed that test because they should have said, Lord, we can't do it, only you can. You know, there's no way for, no physical way for us to be able to do it.
They thought in terms of money, very specifically, like, in the way that we know how to operate, we can do this. And Jesus said, all right. Jonathan, and then Gretchen.
I'm just still kind of amazed earlier in the chapter, they had power to heal the sick. Back in 13, you know, they're working these miracles themselves and still go back to the, you know, the physical, don't have enough cash to buy this food.
Right. When they were living without that for who knows how long they were out there. It's, yeah. Yeah, Gretchen.
Well, it's a struggle that we have, well, at least I have as a human, of extrapolating things that I'm doing personally and seeing how it would work in a large situation. And so they were still thinking, you know, even though they were, they personally, with, you know, God worked through them to heal people. They couldn't see it. They could see, okay, one-on-one, I can handle that. I can comprehend that. You go beyond that, my brain just explodes. And that seems to be kind of where they were at.
Yeah.
I'm kind of feeling a little sympathy for those apostles because it takes a lot of lessons to lay your control down and totally trust that Jesus would take care of you. At least it does for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sitting there thinking, well, I've got 5,000 people to feed. Well, good grief. Well, where's this going to come from, you know?
Right.
And so I feel sorry for him.
We told him to stop talking earlier. Didn't listen. And then he turns it around on us. Rocky.
I'm not sure this. As far as the development of the disciples and what they were expected to do, to go out to the world and teach, this is kind of a micro example of that. Because Jesus is saying, well, you take care of it. And they're like, how? Well, he provides them with the blessings that's necessary for them to take care of it. And now you go from one, which is Jesus, to 12, to the disciples, to 5,000 plus. And could this be kind of like a preliminary lesson to the disciples to prepare them for going through the world?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think so. Because just considering the things that these guys are going to end up facing, they may wish they had to feed 5,000 people by the time they get beaten and thrown in jail and all that sort of stuff. Absolutely. It certainly is. It's all about, as you were saying, it's trust. We're trust. We're talking about faith. We're talking about trust. That's what Jesus is trying to instill in these guys. And absolutely. I think it's to prepare them. Terry.
I'm sure that with their hands-on experience, well, then they had a learning lesson.
They certainly didn't leave that day thinking, not knowing what had happened, because they were intimately involved with that. Let's keep going here, because what's interesting is that Mark provides no commentary. We don't have any comments from Jesus. You know, Jesus is usually pretty quick to call these dudes out after they've missed the point, but there's nothing there. Verse 45, this is what he does. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat, go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea. He meant to pass by them, and when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." And he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased. And they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. There's a commentary at the end, and so this is interesting. We'll get to that in a second. But just talk through what happens here for a second. Immediately, there's that word again. He makes them get into the boat, goes across. Here it's sort of a forceful. He's compelling them. He orders them, it seems. That's the way that the verb reads. But Jesus doesn't go with him. He goes up on the mountain to pray. Your guess is as good as mine what he was praying about. Probably related to what had happened and what was about to happen, possibly. But after a while, he is able to look out on the sea. He sees the boat out there. He realizes that it is being resisted by heavy winds. Doesn't appear to be making much progress. At the fourth watch of the night, which is about 3 to 6 in the morning, he says he came to them walking on the sea. Okay, hold on a second. Let's not lose sight of that. He did what? Walked on water. Let's not get used to these things. Even though it's not about the miracles are signs of the kingdom. He still walked on water. Go try it. You can't do it. And it's a small enough puddle. I mean, it's just the basic laws of physics. The solid always beats, well, I don't know if it beats, it's not rock, paper, scissors, but you know what I mean. That liquid doesn't support a solid. It soaks it up. It pulls it down. Gravity wins. Always. It's just staggering to think about. And that's what he does. But it's not just still water. It's a storm, or at least a wind. There are waves, and yet somehow he's maneuvering out here in this. And so, of course, they think it's a ghost, because no human can do that. Don't you love it when people are immediately, well, humans can't do it, so it's got to be a ghost. That's interesting to me. You just get a lot of, even today, people that are very resistant to the concept of God, but they're very easily still going to supernatural stuff. God is supernatural. He's above nature. That's what supernatural is. I digress. They think it's a ghost. They're terrified. They cry out. Jesus is going to pass them by. He's doing this. He's not trying to miss them. The way some of the translations read, it looks like he's trying to sneak by in the middle of the night during the storm. If he didn't want to be seen, there are plenty of other ways he could have gone. He's intentionally doing this. He's walking by the boat in order to be seen because he wants them to see him. And they get scared. Jesus calms them down. Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. He gets in the boat with them. The wind stops. I don't think that's a coincidence. It seems to be intentional there. It says then that they were utterly astounded. Again, that word keeps coming up, but that it's interesting how Mark says this. They were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. So they're astounded at Jesus. We talked about in a previous lesson people being amazed and astonished by what Jesus was doing, and yet that's still not faith. And I'm just wondering if that's kind of the implication here, is you got guys amazed and astounded, but they're not quite fully believing because this is different. This was the result of a hard heart. This is amazement connected to the hardness of the heart. Okay, it's not just, wow, you're the Son of God, I believe that you did this amazing thing because that's who you are. Their hearts were hard because of everything that had been going on. So I'm going to ask you all, what does this story have to do with the loaves? We're talking about people in a boat, in a windy sea, and a guy walking on water. Why does Mark make these connections? Why is this one big story? What don't they understand? Okay.
And they're like, well, that can't be it. So they're looking around.
Okay.
And it seems, that seems kind of like what they're doing.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay.
It seems like it should be obvious.
Sure. And what is it?
That Jesus is the one that's doing this, that it is a miracle from God, that he is who he says that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I even push you farther on that and maybe say that Jesus is God. God's standing right in front of them. David?
Their hearts being hardened, and the idea that we're all trapped kind of in our experiences and what we see and what we know. And to come to a point where all of a sudden all the rules, it's really hard to accept something that all the rules that I ever knew are gone. And that's actually what's happened, because he's not limited to the rules that they know. And he's demonstrating in all these different areas. And by seeing that he can heal all these diseases, seeing that he can create food from basically nothing and feed all these people, he's not limited to the rules of their experience. And they can't grasp that concept. And so they weren't able, as a convinced, they couldn't take from this moment to another one that's, a big step. They always see some big steps, but he's not limited to our rules. He's God.
Remember, we talked about that parable of the lamp being revealed, and then the implication is if you have more, more will be given to you. What you just said is exactly what that parable is saying, is that are they taking what they know and what's immediately available to them and thinking through it and connecting these dots and discerning it? Because if they do that, Jesus says more is going to be given to them. They're struggling with that, and so they're not getting more. Steve?
That's kind of what I'm thinking, is that they're not, they're seeing everything, but they're not comprehending and understanding it. And so when it says they were astonished or amazed, the fact that they were astonished is what I feel like he's talking about. They should be, when he steps into the boat, Lord, on the sea, thank you, Lord, you did this, thank you. Instead, they're just like, here we are again, and we're amazed again. Not to say that they shouldn't ever not be thankful for what he can do. It's just that the responses that they're giving him is not the response of, there's always a surprise. And in that surprise, you're saying, wow, I didn't know you could do this.
Okay. David?
He's been teaching them in this, but he was really kind of, like the thing with the, he said, you take care of feeding them, and then he showed them how. Well, here, he was separated from them. He's already left them in the boat where they're struggling trying to get off the water. And then I go, and he actually protected them a little bit where he was going to walk past them. That's actually a little easier to see something that you can't understand that's kind of walking past you than it is something that's terrifying and is coming right at you and you can't get away. And so he's actually, and he spoke to him first and then he came, but then he got in the boat. So it is still kind of scary, but he really did limited, and he's bringing them kind of gentle, but they're just, and we're the same way. From what we know what we know, and it's really sometimes, and I know what God says, but somehow I can't make it connect. And I know he's right, and it's not that I mean to be hard-hearted. I just can't get over this hump here. I can't figure out how to connect to where he said. And that faith is hard.
Yeah. So there's two things that I'm seeing, and I don't know, what does this have to do with the loaves? This is how I'm thinking about it. First of all, Jesus is God. They're not making that connection. You ever heard a story about people of Israel being in the wilderness without bread and getting fed by God? not what we just talked about. That happened before, and yet it happened again right now. There's a lot of symbolism in what just happened. There's imagery in the Old Testament that talks about God being described as walking on waves or walking through waves. If they're thinking about this imagery from the Old Testament, they might start to connect those dots. So they're not seeing that Jesus is God. But I think he's also trying to get them to understand that they are not God either. Even though they'd accomplished many healings, they weren't his equals. And I think this sort of brings that into stark contrast, no matter how good they were feeling about themselves. And maybe I'm reading that into the story, but they're learning who's in control. They're learning what their place is in this as well. And that's why I think it's interesting when they admit their inability to feed the crowds, Jesus still says, okay, here, now give it to them. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that had to have been a very humbling situation for them to be handed that bread and give it to 5,000 people when they said that they didn't have enough money to do it. And I don't think that's a power play by Jesus. I think it's just helping them understand there's a relationship here. This is who I am, and this is not who you are. And perhaps this is part of the reason why he puts them in the boat. I mean, do you think he knew that what was going to happen that night on the boat? He might have. Maybe he had a hand in it, in causing it. Don't know. But I also think because they're not God, because of who they are, they're still very limited in their thinking. Like I was saying, even after this preaching trip, they still think inside the box. Jesus asked them to live outside the box on that preaching trip. And it to live in completely contrary ways that are contrary to normal ways of thinking. And yet when they come back, they can only think about how to buy food with money. That's normal. That's normal ways of operating. It's only possible through supernatural means. And so for that to happen, they have to be totally reliant on Jesus. How often do we try to solve a problem in ways that we understand, but often the only answer is supernatural, is Jesus? Sometimes the only answer is walking on the water. And that's hard to trust, right? That's hard to have faith in. But Jesus doesn't need money. Jesus doesn't need a boat. He acts completely and totally outside the boxes that we live and think in. And I think that's, there's a big takeaway for me from this text. It's who he is and how he goes about his business. And you might just sum it up by saying God's ways are higher than our ways and his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And we're trying to get there, but sometimes you just got to walk on the water. That's the only option.
Or fall under it.
Or go down. All right. Larry, go ahead.
Not long ago, Larry,
how does Larry look at it now?
I don't look at it right now.
Okay. Very good. We're all trying to change our thinking. That's good. That's good. We'll get into the beginning of chapter 7 next week. I hope that makes sense to you all and helps you out a little bit. It's interesting. They're interesting stories, but they always have some deeper meaning. Dickie's got the prayer, and then after that we'll be dismissed.